On the last podcast, we talked about singleness, we talked about marriage, we talked about the priority of marriage, vows of marriage, setting guardrails and boundaries, doing life together.
And now we move forward in parenting when kids come into the equation and then when kids go. So that's going to be things we will have to deal with. Welcome in. We're going to talk about some marriage.
Yeah, so last time we talked about being single. We related that to the motorcycle. Who you marry is so important in life. And so don't just settle to marry anyone, but wait for God's best for you. And then when you do get married, enjoy that season of life. Enjoy being married without kids. You're never going to have that time again where it's just you and your spouse. And so enjoy. What did you say? Live your age?
Live your age.
Live your age. I thought that was profound. And so today we're talking about married with kids. Like the kid comes on the scene, your life completely changes. Your life is not your own. I remember having this freak out moment when we brought Jolyn home because you're the hospital. You have the baby in the hospital. Of course, I didn't have the baby. Jennifer had the baby. was so mad at me because it was an all-day affair.
She wanted you to have it?
It was an all-day affair because she was 2 weeks late with Jolyn, and he was like, you know, 10 pounds something.
A big boy.
So we ended up gathering this party in the nurses. I had like 15, 20 friends like hanging out. We had ordered barbecue. People had brought in barbecue. We were watching NBA basketball.
Oh, like, I'm sure that went great.
And then so then they called me. It's like, it's time. So I go running in
Hold
there.
Hold on, it's the fourth quarter.
Yeah. I go running in there, and they have the gown for me.
Yeah.
The footies didn't. Well, then the barbecue hits me. So I'm having to go into the little bathroom right there in the hospital room, and okay. I'm like blowing it out. And Jennifer and the doctor, the nurses are like, kind of what you threw at us a while ago.
they could smell it.
Yeah, and Jennifer's like, Jonathan, come on. And I'm in the bathroom.
Wait a minute. I've never heard this in my life. I've never heard this story, but I've never heard somebody like, hey, I know you're pushing and I know things are really difficult right now. You got a lot going on, but hang on a second. Man, I got to go to the bathroom.
Johnny Ray's barbecue hit me hard. It came quick. I'd gone in the bathroom to put on change the clothes.
I got you. But then you stood in there for 20 minutes.
I was in there quite some time. It was more of a flesh as you go situation.
That, first of all, you don't talk about in detail about that stuff. Nobody wants to know about you. That is incredibly selfish of you, by the way. Anyways, continue the story.
I've been hearing that for 30 years.
That's incredible. Yeah.
But yeah, so Jolyn was born. Of course, all the people were there at the hospital. Everyone leaves. Well, then we were able to stay in the hospital for like 2 or 3 days. You know, like the nurses are taking care of everything. So we felt super comfortable at the hospital because then anything happened, you know, you hit the button and the nurse could come and mm-hmm. he's okay.
And you're learning too. I mean,
we're learning how to do all this thing, and so we get home, and we set him down in the little car carrier in his bedroom, and we had this freak out moment. Like, we are now responsible for this child, and just his whole life is flashing before you. Like, not only responsible to keep him breathing at first, we just wanted to keep him breathing,
keep you alive.
You know, keep him alive. But then you got to teach him how to walk and talk, and
obviously that comes way down the road.
All of these. You know, how to drive.
It's a lot.
How to treat a girl. Like, yeah. There's, you know.
It definitely punches you in the face.
Like, it's like overwhelming.
Can we start with like the baby first? I mean, yeah, my God, you're going to college and baby was just born 3 days ago. But anyways.
I know, but all these things are running through your mind.
That didn't run through my mind. I wasn't thinking about college.
What was it like for y'all when Nicholas was born?
Okay, let's just figure it out.
Were y'all here in Georgia?
No, we were in Ohio.
You're in Ohio.
We were in Ohio.
Yeah.
But no, it's just figure it out. Like, what's the next steps? What do I do? Like, a lot of bad advice. Like, people saying that, oh, they're already sleeping through the night. That's crazy. Then you realize that when they're younger, they do that because they're not awake. They don't have any, you know, they're not focusing on anything. They're not wanting to move. And then as they get a little bit older, you're like, oh my gosh, now they don't want to sleep. And so obviously there's a ton that goes into it, but there's definitely moments where you're like that. But the best thing I heard you say in the sermon, which I really want to talk about, is when you started your marriage, it was y'all two. And then when the baby comes, where does the baby go? You remember what you said? The baby goes in the back seat.
Oh, yeah.
The baby goes in the back seat in the car seat. Sure. Yeah. So let's use that analogy now. Baby's not driving the car. Baby's not riding shotgun. Like, they're not old enough to ride shotgun. Yeah. But I love the fact that you said that. And it's just, it's an important visualization. Like, there's so much tending to the baby. Mm-hmm. And there's so many needs and feeding and changing. And, like, you know, they cry, they get what they want, right? Like, you need to try to fix it. But I love the fact that it's still us two in the front seats, and they're in the back. They're added to the family. Mm-hmm. They don't become the family.
Yeah. That you're right. I'm so impressed that you listened to my sermon.
I listen.
Now you got your notes over there.
Yeah, I don't even know if this is the right sermon. It's not, but that's okay. That's not the point. this is your sermon notes, but it's not the right one.
Yeah. The first point was that kids join the family.
Yeah, that's important.
They're not taking over the family.
That's important, man.
They join the family, and they're going to leave the family. You know what I mean? They're coming. Yeah. They're going to be with us for 18 years or so, and then they're moving on.
Like, that perspective is important to keep throughout the most difficult times and all the stages. Like, your wife was here first, and she's going to be here after. Mm-hmm. So parent with that in mind, you know. Be a husband with that in mind. Be a wife with that in mind. Like, that's an important thing we can remind ourselves, I think, a lot. Keep going, though.
Well, I think it obviously changes your family when you have a child. Like, it's a blessing. It's a gift. It's a miracle. But I've seen some people, and some of our friends, people we know, they have a child. They don't come to church for like a year. Like, they're so, like, they let that child dictate their schedule, their time, everything that they're doing. And maybe that's an excuse for some people. Well, we can't come to church. We just had a kid. Or they don't want to put the kid in the nursery, so they don't come to church. But what do you think about people who let the kids run the family? Like, the kids are calling the shots.
I think it's natural. I think natural because they need so much that and you have to do it. I get it. Like, I can sympathize. I can empathize. I see how it happens. But, you know, I see people sleeping in different beds with their kids. And I see the kids sleeping in the bed, which obviously, you know, hurts you and your wife time. So I think we've got to fight the inclination, because we have to provide. We have to do those things. But we have to realize, like, we got to still have our time. Because now you've added another kid. A lot of times they still have work. Both sides have work. And we have to communicate. We have to make sure that we have our time. We got to make sure that we got babysitters, that me and my wife can get away and I can understand what's going on in her life and stay plugged in with her feelings. Like, it's going to be difficult in the beginning to accomplish this, but we've got to keep the goal in mind, the end goal in mind of we're raising adults to give away, yeah. Like, not to keep. We're not raising a kid to keep. So working together and being on the same page and starting to put those rules in place, like, this is what we're going to be, this is who we're going to be, this is what we're going to do, is important.
Do you remember the first time that Lindsay left you alone with Nicholas?
I think so. I mean, it happened a lot. So, but I do remember him crying in the bedroom one time, like, uncontrollably, and just wouldn't shut up. And I literally was like, now I see why people lose their minds. 100%. Like, now I see why people, like, want to throw babies across the room, because I wanted to throw him across the room. Like, he just wouldn't shut up. But, I mean, it started early. I remember holding him through the night, and he'd be crying. And then I remember putting him on his rocker, the chair that just rocks and vibrates. Oh, yeah. And I don't know why, one night I put him on the oven. Hold on. I didn't turn the oven on. I put him on the stove top sideways, and he was fussing like crazy, and he was annoying the crud out of me. And I remember I turned the light on, like, for the oven light that comes down, uh-huh. And he shut up. And I just remember going, I'll take it. Praise Jesus. Like, and I left the light on, and literally he was fine for a little while. So I definitely remember, like, some bad stories.
If it was me or other people. But one of the things that would calm the child down was getting in the car and driving.
Yeah.
And so people are, like, in the middle of the night, you're like, put the kid in the car seat and you're just driving around the neighborhood.
I mean.
And, like, sleeping in the car.
By the way, I would have had no problem doing that. Like, whatever it takes. Now, we were big on sleep training. And if you have a newborn and you are listening to this, this is the best.
Did y'all do the growing kids God's way?
No, but listen, okay. this is the best parenting advice I can give anyone. Like, the best thing we did was the sleep easy solutions and sleep training our children. It's the best thing we ever did with our kids. Our kids have never slept in our bed. Our kids don't come out of their room. Like, they learned how to sleep themselves and soothe themselves. I would recommend anybody who has a child, everybody I know that has a child, I buy the book and I give it to them. I'm serious. Yeah. Like, I buy that book.
Are we getting an endorsement for this?
No, I should. But like, people at ESPN, everybody who had a baby that was near me, I bought the book for them. I sent it to them. Like, Jake Fromm just had a baby. Bought the book, gave it to him. Like, okay, yeah. Whoever it is, it's the greatest thing.
I think
thing.
We had that too.
It's the greatest
teaching
thing we did.
Kid, putting them on a schedule.
Putting them on a schedule, but them learning to soothe themselves when they sleep. And like, so you got to let them cry. And that was my responsibility because Lindsay wasn't as good with it. But I stood outside the door, and after 15 minutes, you go in and you let them know that you're still there. You didn't abandon them, but they're okay. And then they learn how to soothe themselves. And it took one and a half nights, and they slept through the night the rest of their lives. Like,
did any of your kids have objects that soothed them?
Their thumbs.
Okay.
Both of ours had their thumbs.
So Jolyn had this blanket he called Nanny, and that thing he couldn't take.
Nanny.
Nanny, I believe it was the name. Or maybe that was Julia's. Julia had this bunny rabbit that with these ears, and she would twist the ear in her finger and stick it in her mouth, like the ear. Okay. Talking about the nastiest, stinkiest, smellingest stuffed animal. We had so that you could only get these at this little shop in Seaside down in Florida. So I remember every year we'd go back to Florida,
buy another one?
Buy another bunny.
Like buy or one Julia. That's or bleach it.
Oh, yeah. And try to throw the old one away without her knowing about it.
Which is probably hard, but.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going way back.
Way back.
We're going way back.
But it's
that's
but it's important.
For some of these young.
Yeah.
Some of these young parents. So kids join the family. Marriage comes first. Marriage is the priority relationship. You had a video go viral on Instagram a couple of years ago just because you were saying that Lindsay comes
first.
She comes ahead. I didn't think that was a big deal.
No.
When you said it, but it had like a million something views, all these comments, like people arguing, no, the kids come first. And I've heard guys say, well, you know, the wives come and go, but you're a parent forever.
I've never been around anybody that said that, but you actually have. No, it seems very simple to us, but a lot of people don't know that. And a lot of people aren't growing up in church. Mm-hmm. A lot of people aren't around people that are hearing that. So I think it's important that you understand, like, you know, your wife comes first, your kids come next. And that's why the analogy, I think you said, the baby joins the back seat. The baby joins the family, mm-hmm. not ride shotgun.
Yeah. And one of the things we talked about is don't fall into the trap of overparenting. Because overparenting, the classic helicopter parent, it's not good for the parent, it's not good for the child, and it's not good for the marriage relationship.
No, but it's hard. It's hard not to overparent.
And Jennifer would say she's a helicopter parent.
Yeah,
she's a rescuer. She likes to help people.
I think it's easy to say that, but I do think it's hard, and it takes a team effort, and it takes your spouse being able to say, hey, like, you know, I think we're doing too much of this. I think you're doing too much of this. I think I'm doing too much of that. But I mean, you definitely, and again, I've told you all this before, but like, I don't pray for my kids' protection. I pray for my kids' resilience. Like, I want my kids to be so resilient that whatever comes their way, they're able to handle it. So struggle is okay with me. Like, I'm good with failure. I'm good with them having hard times. I'm good with them facing problems and trying to figure it out. But like, when they're younger, you know, you see so many times where, you know, baby walks a stroller into something and it gets stuck and you see a parent come fix it. Like, well, let them figure things out, right? Like, don't overparent the small things, mm-hmm. and don't over worry. And I'm not saying it's easy; it's difficult. But like, parent with the future in mind, like what you're trying to develop and what you want to build, and the things that are important to you and your spouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what do you want your child to be like when he or she's 40 years old? And you have that. I have a couple in our church that they're around the age of 40. Great marriage, great kids. And like, that's what I want my kids to be like when they're of that age. Now, I said something in church that got me in trouble.
Okay.
Let's
talk about this.
Ended up having a meet with the single ladies. Some of the single moms of our church were upset with me.
Okay.
Because of the statement that I made. And it cost me.
You sure you want to tackle this and say it again?
Well, we can talk about it.
Okay.
And see what you think about it.
Okay.
And I doubt they'd listen to the podcast.
I'm just saying I might would have left off like that as a couple people at the church, but continue. I love it. Let's go.
I didn't mention any names.
No, I didn't mention any names. Cynthia.
So no.
It's not Cynthia. I don't know
anybody.
I don't
know any Cynthias. The best thing you can do for your child is have a strong, healthy marriage. And so that was the statement that I made.
Completely, of course, it's a, completely agree.
It's a marriage
conversation.
We're talking about marriage. Well, they took exception to it because they're not married. They're single moms. And I don't fault them. Like, and we talked, and even in week one, I talked about there are biblical grounds for divorce, and we didn't have time to get into that. But
there were the A's, right? Adultery, abuse,
abandonment.
Yeah. Yeah.
You remembered.
Why are you so surprised when I say something like that? Like, oh, look at this idiot.
A short pencil is better than a long memory. I like that you're taking notes.
Adultery, abuse, and what was it? Abandonment?
Abandonment.
Yeah. So those are biblical reasons to...
Yeah, biblical reasons. And I asked them, they were upset with me, because I did say, if you're not married, don't run out and get married, like, so that you can be a better parent. But they just wanted me to give a disclaimer that they just wanted me to recognize that there are some single parents out there. It may not necessarily been their fault that they got divorced. Yeah. And they're doing the best that they can raise their kids.
That's what I would argue. But I would also argue that you still have a relationship. If the father's still around, mm-hmm. if the mother's still around, whatever side it is, like, you still have a choice of how you want to parent with them and how you want to treat them mm-hmm. and how you want to talk about them, which I think will say a lot to your kids. And it'll lead them to a successful life, or it'll a lot of times put them behind the eight ball. But no, I think you're spot on. I think it's the most important job as a married man is to show my kids what a healthy marriage looks like. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's one of the most important things, best things I can do is, like, that's my girl. Like, she is my everything. Like, I don't make decisions without her. I don't do things during my day without thinking about her. I put her first. Like, her needs are important. Her opinion is important. She's valued. Like, I love her. Like, she is awesome, you know? And I think that's something that we all need to do. And it goes a long way with the way our kids respect their moms and the way our kids respect their dads. Is if they're always respecting each other, there's nothing but respect in your house, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you're seeing respect all the time, what are you going to do? You're going to give respect. Mm-hmm. But if you're seeing disrespect and dissension and fighting and stuff like that, then I think it becomes different. But the only thing I'll say about that is, it's also, we also don't act like we're perfect, and we also don't want our kids to think that we don't argue and that we don't disagree, but we disagree and we move on. We disagree and we do it in a respectful manner. Just because I disagree with mommy doesn't mean I have the right to tell her she's wrong and she's stupid. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. we do argue, we do have differences, but we keep respect first, and we're not gonna disrespect each other when we don't feel the same way.
And you have to fight fair.
Yes, it's a good way to put it. Fight fair.
If you don't have any arguments in the marriage, you don't have any disagreements, then that's where a whole host of things can happen. Because next thing you know, that person's gone. You know, that people let things build up instead of, like,
talking them out.
Yeah, just conflict resolution. Hey, you're going to have conflict. You're living with someone. You're different people. Now, one of the things I wanted to mention when you were talking is, never talk bad about your spouse to your kid.
Nope.
No matter what. Even if you disagree, you still don't... Even if you're not married to that person, like, especially in the blended family situation, like, you don't want to talk bad about someone's parents.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, like, then you give them the freedom to do that. Mm-hmm. You're giving them the freedom to talk bad, and you're giving them the freedom to lose respect in dad. You're giving them the freedom to lose respect in mom, you know, like, or freedom to question, when realistically it's like, and here's another thing too, like, along in that vein is, there's a lot of times where Lindsay has said stuff to our kids and I'm like, don't agree. Don't feel the same way. But I keep my stupid mouth shut and I let it finish. I let them go to bed. And then I talk to Lindsay like, hey, I don't necessarily agree with that. Like, that's not how I feel. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to say that in front of the kids, where I literally just cut her down at the mm-hmm. knees and said, and I don't overrule my wife. I don't overrule her when I think something should happen. Now, do we have disagreements about that stuff? Absolutely. Probably most of our disagreements is going to be in that vein, but we now have to talk about it later, and mm-hmm. we have to talk about how we want to handle situations And it might be a little bit different than what she said, but it's not in front of them cutting her out at the knees or forcing disrespect.
Yeah, I think you always have an opportunity to speak highly of your spouse. And so, like, yesterday, Jessie came in, and she's like, "Mom's mad at me."
Uh-oh.
And I said, "Why?" And she said she had not done some of her math assignments. Like, she didn't get some of her stuff turned in, and she had this...
Well, do your crap, Jessie!
Really low grade. She's like, "Mom's all mad at me," and Jessie was upset about it. And I said, "Well, Mom's not mad at you. Mom is wants what's best for you, and she's just trying to help you." And Jessie's like, "I know, and I'm not mad at her for it. You know, she was just feeling bad that she had not done her math assignments that she was supposed to be
doing." But guess what? We talk it out. Like, that's a great way to... I don't think we understand how much, like, when we say things out loud to each other and people, like, it just... It clarifies things in your head. It crystallizes things in your head. So I think it's...
She's just helping you out. She's trying to hold you accountable.
Yeah, but you can easily go like, "Oh, yeah, like, this, just listen, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal." Yeah. Like, math's not a big deal. But, yeah, you backed her up. And I think that it goes a long way. Yeah. Like, again, it just takes away... We're always going to have negative thoughts about our spouses, about our kids. Our kids are going to have them about us. They're going to have them about other people. But, like, if we can teach them to, like, "All right, we had a moment, but, like, let's stay positive." We're doing a great job as parents.
Yeah. So where were we? Oh, yeah. So then I got into... So I talked about the having a strong, healthy marriage, and I don't know if you remember the illustration, the vacated marriage versus the tethered marriage.
Yeah, that was
you
okay.
You want the kids tethered?
Yeah, that was fine.
From that.
That wasn't your best analogy.
Well, I stole that from someone else. That wasn't even my analogy.
It was from a book. Yeah, it was a book you shared. It was okay.
We won't tell the author.
No, we don't need to. So don't tell the author and don't tell. But
I talked about three things that strengthen the bond of marriage. The first was faith, that we have a shared faith that God is at the center.
Which you talked about earlier.
Three cords is not easily broken.
And you talked about, like, how much your wife, like, motivated you and inspires you when you see her heart beating for God, like, how much it makes you respect her. Same way. I come out in the morning, my wife's always reading. Like, she's always in Bible study. She's just special. Like, I know she's special, and I know she's awesome, and it makes me love her more because I respect the crap out of who she is, and I respect how she carries herself and how important and dedicated and devoted she is. Like, that's, it's one of the most impressive things about my wife. So that's huge. Like, that's not like a little thing. That's a big deal.
Big, big thing. The second one was intimacy. And then I was kind of joking around when guys hear the word intimacy, we're thinking sex, but when girls hear the word intimacy, they're thinking more like communication. And I talked about MST and NST. Men need more sexual touches. Women need non-sexual touches. So touching is good.
Yeah.
Touching is always good.
Well, and
you
women,
don't have to side hug your wife.
No, you don't have to side hug your wife, but women obviously very different. Expectations for women, very different. But here's the thing, even with your sex life, because that's not something some people want to talk about, like, talk to your spouse about what the expectations are. Talk to her about, like, what's realistic. And then you're not always in your head guessing, you know, about what you think you should get or what you think you shouldn't get. And here's the thing. It's your problem. And by the way, I'm guilty of this. So I'll share. Like, it's your problem if you change your behavior and the way you treat your wife because you're not getting sex. That's a you problem. Like, you need to look in the mirror and you need to figure some things out, because that's incredibly selfish. Like, that's incredibly petty. And I've done it. Like, and I do it still sometimes. And we've got to be able to assess that and see that. And I've actually had to pray, like, just in my head too. I've had to pray, like, "God, help me for sex to be not that important to me." Like, I've prayed that prayer. Mm-hmm. Like, take my ability to, like, take my want to have sex all the time away, so I don't have that. And I don't want to create tension. Like, it's just, it's a part of it, man. Mm-hmm. But you got to realize, like, women's needs are different, and meeting their needs, and it's the microwave versus the crock pot, right? You've heard that for years. Like, men are a microwave, you're always ready to go. Women are a crock pot. Like, it's over time, it's loving them, it's doing the dishes. Yes, doing the dishes. It's taking the trash out, right? Like, it's talking to her and meeting her needs and things that are important to her, and you give yourself a much better chance to be successful in the other area.
Well, I think I appreciate you being vulnerable there, because I do think most marriage, this is an issue with I would assume every marriage, but the key is communication.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel like, if your expectations are high and you don't think your expectations are being met, I think having to communicating with your spouse of what that expectation is, and maybe it's unrealistic, or maybe it's not unrealistic,
but you can at least hear her side and she hears your side, and you can have some kind of expectation, which is realistic.
We think about it all the time,
which is unrealistic,
and they're not thinking about it.
Correct.
That much.
So like, but again, if we understand our spouse more, then I think we've got a better chance to be successful in that avenue. Mm-hmm.
For them, it's more emotional.
Yeah.
Than it is.
Well, here's the thing.
Physical.
Okay. Making love. That it's making more love. That's what you're making love. It's intimacy. It's making more love. It's making your relationship better. It's making love grow. Like, I think that's the, like, and I think for men, that's something that's really important. Like it absolutely makes you feel closer and more loved and more desired. And like, so I think it's a, you know, it's definitely a big deal that it needs communication.
Yeah. And then the last thing was vision. And I talked about where there is no vision, the people will perish, and where there's no vision, the marriage will die. So what's the vision for your marriage? What do you want your marriage to look like in 5 years, 10 years?
So how do you teach people to, how do you teach people to accomplish that?
And then you've got to sit down and dream together, pray together, talk about the future. I mean, I'm a futurist, so I love talking about the future. I probably live in the future too much to where I'm not satisfied with just enjoying the present. And
what was my quote?
Being where we are.
Live
act your age.
Live
your age.
Come on, man.
Act your age.
You need to act your age, bro.
I definitely don't act my age. But yeah. Yeah,
but
I think having a vision, I mean, you know, is a planning retreat or just sitting around the dinner table, whatever works for you.
I mean, me and my wife were walking, and literally it led into like Nicholas's age, Leah's age, them being gone. What do we want it to look like? You know, I mean, what you talk about friends that are really important to us right now that we want to make sure we communicate with because life's so busy, you know, and you lose touch with people when you're not in the circles. And so, like, it's got to be purposeful, right? Like, those things don't come, those alignment affects assignment, right? And if we're not aligned where we want to go, it's going to be hard to accomplish it. So I do think it's important. And again, every part of marriage goes back to communication. Every single bit of it goes back to, can you communicate well or not? And if you're not, how do we get better in that avenue? Like, how do we take steps to close that gap? Like, I mean, I've met with people and, you know, that struggle in that area with their wives that have been married for 15 years or so. And I'm like, all right, well, how do we start this? Like, how do we start the communication ball rolling? Like, it's been so long since I did it. I don't even know how to start it. I'm like, all right, well, let's think about some ideas. Like, let's write her a note. Let's text her. Like, it's okay to have text messages in your phone to your wife that you put in your notes that you've put there and you just copy and paste it and send it. Like, if you want to be more intentional, that's okay. Like, but you've got to have some kind of a plan of how you're going to accomplish that. And so I think looking at the future of where y'all want to be, where we want to be, what is success? And now I work towards that success slowly, as opposed to I look up 5 years from now and I'm an empty nester. And it's like, ooh, see what happened was, like, we knew this day was coming. Mm-hmm. Like, how are we going to be ready for it?
Yeah.
So I think it's important.
That's good. So the last part of the marriage series we did, we talked about single, married before kids, married after kid, or married with kids.
This is you, bro.
And then married after kids.
This is you.
This is when you go get the Corvette.
Well, you're not there yet, actually, because
I'm not there. I still have a teenager.
I forget you still have a granddaughter.
16-year-old.
Yeah, that's so strange.
Now. Oh. And she's driving on her own.
That's good.
So she's come a long way. So
you've already parented with kids that are gone.
Right.
So
we have two that are fully independent.
Correct.
Fully,
so what is the key? What do you wish you could have done differently? Or what do you wish you would have done differently? Or what are you glad you did? You know what I'm saying? Like, what are those things? That's the questions I like to ask people all the time is like, what did you do in your family that really made a difference? And what did you do that you would have changed? So I'm putting you on the spot there, question man. Yeah, you like to throw all the questions to me.
You are putting me on the spot, and I'm gonna answer the question how Trump and Harris were answering the questions.
Not answering the questions?
Yeah. So the biblical goal of parenting is the process of teaching and training your child to leave.
So you just answered my question with a prepared statement. Is that what you just did?
Is that That's not? Did you watch the debate?
I'm not talking about the debate.
Oh my God.
I have no desire to entertain that or talk about that because that stuff is infuriating to me.
I had to turn it off. It was almost like, I remember back in the day, and I can't remember, maybe Ole Miss a couple of years ago was beating LSU so bad, I turned it off at halftime and couldn't watch the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And that's how the debate was. I had to turn it off at halftime. Like, I can't. Give me some.
It was awful.
Give me some golf to watch. Give me
it was
some,
awful.
Give me something.
Yeah, I agree with you. So how have we done it besides the biblical answer? What's the important? Give me the important things real quick with parenting an adult.
The thing that, oh, you know, do like the history of what I did right and what I did wrong.
No, I'm talking about parenting an adult. What does the rug on the thing say? What does it say? What did you say in the church service? You said something about not having opinions or.
So I read a book a couple of years ago at the beach, and the title of the book was Keep the Welcome Mat Out
and your mouth shut. That's what it was.
And I think that's the best advice I can give to, because you think about, you know, the relationship that we have with our parents. I mean, we're adults.
Yes. And grown men.
We're grown ace men.
We
don't want them giving us unsolicited advice.
I love when they do that. Are you kidding me? Freaking awesome. Thanks, Mom. That's exactly what I wanted to do in parenting.
I think what happens is if you give them unsolicited advice, they're not gonna be asking you for advice when they do need advice, and maybe they're not even calling you or reaching out to you because they don't want to hear it.
I'm fully anticipating not giving advice.
Yeah,
like I'm fully anticipating not being asked, but I'm not there yet. But I'm parenting with that in mind. Like I'm parenting with them, like we're trying to help them become as independent as possible and do their own thing where they don't have to, where they don't need us. Mm-hmm. Like Nicholas going to, you know, PT, you know, physical therapy by himself and checking himself out of school. And like, you want that. Like we're striving to force that independence and I'm pushing myself out the door while I'm doing that. So it's kind of back asswards, right? Like it's kind of counterintuitive, but I think that's the goal. And that's the point. I want them not to need me. Mm-hmm. I want them to be able to do things on their own. And I look forward to the day when I can be their friend and I can be a peer.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that yet, but just somebody they can lean on when they have a question, but like also that they know they'll get a quick answer. And you know, this is what we did, but this ain't the perfect way to do it. Like there's not one way to do anything, man. And that's what's babies and parenting and stuff like that. But just, so that's, I know it's going to be tough.
Yeah. Psalm 127 says that children are a gift from the Lord and that blesses the man whose quiver is full of them. And it uses the illustration that our kids are arrows in their quiver. A full quiver is five. You may need three more kids. You only have two.
Hard pass.
So you need two more then. You could adopt.
You need two more then.
Yeah.
That changed quickly. That changed quickly.
I'm ready for some grandkids.
I do love this analogy though. Keep it going.
Yeah, like, so the idea is that kids are like arrows, and it's our job. Arrows are never meant to stay in the quiver. Arrows are meant to be launched into the world. And to your point, when you begin to launch your kids into the world when they're in high school, when you launch an arrow into battle, that arrow is going to get dinged up. That arrow is going to get hurt. It's going to get bruised. It's going to take some nicks and scratches. But you would rather your child be launched into the world while he or she's still living in your house, because at that point you can still help them, coach them, teach them. And so I think it's important to not overprotect your kids, but to begin launching them out, and especially when they start driving. I mean, like Jessie's grown so much since really the last month, because she's now driving to school on her own. She's driving. She has a job that she goes to on her own. She's gassing up her own car. She didn't realize how much it cost. So now she's trying to figure out, like, well, I got to work, you know, X two babysitting to... jobs to pay to fill the tank up.
But how cool is that, though? But, like, Nicholas is 16 now. It's just, I just remember the excitement of 16. And I remember, and maybe it's because I've been praying for God to open my eyes and make me see better to them, but like, independence, going where I want to go. Like, it was just awesome. The freedom that came with it. I was like, dude, enjoy it, man. Like, enjoy the mess out of this. Mm-hmm. This is fantastic. Wherever you want to go, Like, go eat with your friends. Go do what you want. Like, you literally have a key now to go do what you want to do when you want to do it. And so I think it's fantastic. It's been really, really cool.
Yeah, we talked about in the message the different release points. And over time, when they're little, it might just be, hey, you're letting them play in the backyard by themselves, or you're letting them ride their bike in the neighborhood, or they get on that bus for the first time and go to kindergarten, or they spend the night at a friend's house. And all these are big steps in a child's life. And so the driver's license is a huge one. But then when they graduate from high school, and whether they go to college, go to the military, or just get into the workforce or the career, that's a huge, like, you're giving them more and more. It's like the idea that you got the kids are on a rope, and you're letting out more and more of the rope.
Yep.
But then sometimes you got to
tug it back a little bit.
Tug it back in. And so that's kind of where you are, especially with the driving, because there's a lot of freedom there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to know when to tighten the rope, know when to let it go.
In closing, kids, like, we need to launch them. We need to let them go. What else did you say with parents? Mouth, keep your mouth shut.
Keep your mouth shut. Keep the welcome mat open.
Keep the welcome mouth open, mouth shut.
You really want them to want to come back home.
Yes. So parent with that in mind.
Okay.
So what else to give people to think about that have older kids? And
I think as a husband and wife, as a mom and dad, or even if you're a single parent, what is the target you're launching your child into? Like, you're launching them as arrows.
Yep.
But what is the target?
What are we aiming at?
What is the aim?
What's success?
What is success? And different families are going to have different success depending on what their family values are.
Yep.
For me, and I shared this Bible verse to close it out. 3 John verse 4 says, "I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth." And that's the biggest thing for me, is that my kids are going to walk with God for a lifetime. That they have a faith of their own, that they're going to be serving God, they're going to be connected to a local church, they're going to be in small group, they're going to raise their kids in church.
Yep.
And I'm not saying they have to be on staff at a church. I'm saying just like they're like active members of a local church. They're married to Christians. You know what I mean? Like, and they're raising their kids.
In order for them to have a faith of their own, they have to be launched, right? Like, they have to do things themselves in that phase. So don't be scared to give them that rope. Don't be scared to pull it back either. Mm-hmm. But, like, we've got to allow them to build their own, you know, habits, and they've got to build their own relationships, and we've got to allow them. And in order to do that, you got to let them fail. Mm-hmm. In order to do that, they're going to go out and they're going to make some stupid decisions, and they're going to do something that you don't agree with. And how we respond to that is important. If we want to build that, if that's what we're shooting them towards, because how we should respond to that is grace. How we should respond to that is, the bigger the issue, the more I still love you. It doesn't matter. So those are important things. If we want to accomplish that in the end, we got to parent like that, right? And we got to do some things that make us different, that make us unique. We got to say no to some things that your kids want to say yes to. And we got to say yes to some things that we want to say no to. Right? Like, I think both of those, I think we've got to meet somewhat in the middle to give a little bit ground, but I like to keep the welcome mat out and keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, and I think when Jolyn and Julia both went off to college, that was really the time they were deciding, is this my faith or is this my parents' faith? Because they're going to decide, are they going to get up and go to church or not? Yep. Are they going to, you know, they could sleep in on Sunday. Are they going to get in a small group? Are they going to get involved in a college ministry? And even it begins in high school. We see this with our student ministry, is, you know, a lot of the student ministries are middle school heavy because the parents are bringing the kids to church and dropping them off.
And then high school.
Then in high school, it's the kid's choice. Like, he's driving, and he could even be telling his parents he's going to church.
He can go wherever he wants to go.
But he can go out to eat. He can go to a friend's house. And so you see this fall off, but that's part of them developing a faith of their own. So I love that analogy of the arrows. Releasing our kids is the process of an act of the will that launches a child toward a predetermined target.